Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Carol Francis Talk Radio Show. Let's make life happen together with authors, scientists, researchers, both inside the box and outside the box of understanding so that you can live a life full of your success, curiosity, enjoyment, happiness, and richness of life in every respect. Let's go beyond our limits. Let's help others go beyond their limits as well. Welcome. So to go beyond our limits today, we're really talking about going beyond our limits in terms of health. Our physical body is such a core element to our ability to be happy, to be energetic, to be creative, to be contributing, to just feeling our best. And when people contact me because they feel anxious or depressed or can't sleep or et cetera, I always consult first what's going on with your body, even though I'm a psychologist. And that's because our body is so core to everything that goes on for us. We are truly driven by and also can drive the wellness of our body. And to help us drive is Edie Summers. And Edie, I'm so glad you're here today. How are you?
Hi, Carol. Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing well, thank you. How are you doing?
Well, thank you. And wellness is actually the focus. You are an author of a book that I actually am going to insist that everybody that comes into my office that has any indication of symptoms along the lines of what you're talking about, I'm going to ask them to read through the portions of your book that are relevant to them, because I think that this type of consciousness is essential for their mental happiness and their family's happiness. The name of the book, everybody, is As It Stands Now, that I know, is called The Memory of Health, A Journey to Well-Being by Edie Summers. Is that still the same title, Edie?
It is. And Carol, thank you so much. That is such a huge endorsement on your part, and I really appreciate
Absolutely.
That. And yes, it is. I have settled on The Memory of Health. That came to me. I think that Deepak Chopra may have mentioned something along those lines in maybe one of his famous books, Quantum Health, at any rate, it came to me and kind of remembering what it's like to be well. So yes, that is most definitely the title, although I did change the subtitle. Originally it was My Journey Through Chronic Fatigue, Chronic Illness and Back, and I changed it to A Journey to Wellbeing to make it more universal.
And all of that's relevant to the evolution of this book that's taken me over 10 years to reach my doorstep. I know that I've ordered a hard copy from Lulu, and I haven't received it yet, so thank you for your PDF. But how can people, just from the very get-go, how can people order this book?
And thank you so much for doing that. Again, I really appreciate that. So I do recommend Lulu. First of all, it's lulu.com. First of all, you would be supporting independent publishing that way, which is, I think, really important. But you can also, I made a interior color version of it that you can get only on lulu.com, and it's the same price. But also, there is an ebook version available on Amazon through Amazon Kindle, if you're part of that, Kindle Unlimited. So that's for someone who is keeping their budget in mind and prefers an ebook, and I will work on the audiobook as well. But you can find it in most online retailers, but I do recommend lulu.com, but of course it's on Amazon.
Okay, and so it's all under The Memory of Health, A Journey to Wellbeing,
yes.
Is that correct? Okay.
Yes.
Now, the reason
yes.
I'm emphasizing the title of this book, everybody, is not to bore you, but because I just want The Memory of Health, A Journey to Wellbeing, to actually become a resource for you, especially if it comes to autoimmune complications, a fatigue or tiredness, anything that's related to inflammation in the body as well. And there may be other categories, but the way I'm going to go about this interview with you, Edie, is to put out a condition that people suffer from. And then if you'll walk us through how to think about all the dimensions of addressing health with us. So the first topic I'm going to bring up is waking up tired. So while you're just kind of contemplating that, waking up tired is related to so many physiological complications, from thyroid to diabetes to just bad eating to insomnia to apnea. I mean, waking up tired has so many
predecessors that are associated to it. It's a symptom that's either in the moment, chronic. And so waking up tired also helps people feel happy about their life or like life is a drag. It's truly related to depression. And then, of course, when you're tired, anything can be irritating or make you feel anxious. So I think this tiredness is so core. So I want to understand how I, waking up tired, can go into your book and think about the many dimensions. And so first let's go to the many dimensions a person needs to be aware of, they need to address potentially in order to no longer wake up tired. What are those many dimensions? What's the pie chart of all those things I need to think about? Go for it.
Okay. So, yeah, so first of all, in my book, I like how you mentioned waking up tired. That is the chapter of the title of the third chapter. And so I do go over many, many different theories of what may cause fatigue, chronic fatigue. So when you were mentioning a pie chart, so I have it kind of structured in terms of, so what I've learned, and this is whether you're waking up tired or in general struggling with general, I would say, health or wellness issues, when you're thinking about a pie chart in terms of what you want to focus on, the umbrella is self-care and what they call living a healthy lifestyle. But if we break it down, the things that are going to potentially help you feel better are self-care, or you could call it stress management. And again, this is all related to hopefully helping you improve your energy levels and alleviating that waking up tired feeling, which is a horrible feeling, and I know it well, and I know a lot of people that I've run across know it well as well. But so self-care or stress management, I would give that about 20% of the focus. But again, keep in mind that if you're thinking of the entire pie, if you were just to think of what's my focus, what's potentially going to help me, you want to think of self-care in general, like it's an umbrella term, and then we can break it down. And then also I mentioned living a healthy lifestyle. So I'll, so in this pie chart, self-care or stress management, about 20%, diet, about 20%, sleep, about 20%. And a lot of people struggle with, they're very kind of wired when they go to sleep. And there are many factors that can impact your sleep. So I would say stress, diet, and sleep, each about 20% of this pie chart that are really important to focus on. And then movement. I don't like to say exercise because a lot of people that are very tired and that are waking up tired or have chronic fatigue actually can feel worse with traditional exercise. But even gentle movement or stretching or working on your chi levels can help. So that I would give that 10%. Toxins, 10%. So things that are irritating to your body are going to be a factor, because that actually a lot of fatigue can be a sign of an activated immune system. So looking at toxins, 10%. Relationships, 10%, because we are so interconnected. And then I like to give 10% to the elements. So kind of doing what you can to rebalance, thinking very holistically, how can I rebalance in terms of water, air, fire, minerals, you know, things along those lines. But I hope that helps a little bit. And of course, we'll probably do a deeper dive into, I can walk people through in the book what to look for if that's a symptom that they have, that they're waking up tired. But in terms of a pie chart, the bigger ones, the core bigger ones are self-care and stress management, 20%, diet, 20%, sleep, 20%. Those are really big, and those always tie in with what's considered living a healthy lifestyle. And for chronic conditions, this is what medicine usually points to. Medicine struggles with treating people with chronic conditions, and they usually refer people back to going back to the core elements of what creates a healthy lifestyle. It's the things that generally help you feel better, but they also seem to address chronic conditions, including whether it's chronic fatigue or CFS. So, and those are self-care, diet, movement, sleep, you know, things along those lines. So, does that make sense in terms of what you asked me? I hope.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm just gonna see if I can recap. So, were looking at self-care, which is an interesting and vague category in my mind. Mm-hmm. And they were looking at sleep, which of course the quality mm-hmm. of sleep, and it's very relevant. And of course, fatigue can interfere with sleep, oddly enough, and can reverse. And then we're looking at diet as very core. I'm assuming mm-hmm. that might include also supplements, but we'll get into that.
Yeah.
And then we're looking at movement. It's interesting you put that mm-hmm. at 10%, because probably in my life I put that at 30%. So that's interesting. You're talking about mm-hmm. relationships and mm-hmm. toxics in the environment, and then just mm-hmm. being in some sort of sync with the environment. Do I have like the seven,
I love
seven
that.
Pieces of the pie?
Yeah, I love how you say that, being in sync. And yes, normally I would put movement higher too. And again, kind of modern medicine really emphasizes, with living a healthy lifestyle, I believe there are three main components. Usually it's movement, sleep, and diet, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I like to add in, yes, I do believe movement is big. I think that... Yeah, I know. I agree with you. But you can also add that to the self-care or stress management piece of the pie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, I practice yoga, and it all depends on how I feel that day, whether I'm just working on focusing on my breathing or adding in stretches or actual poses, or even restorative yoga. It depends on how I feel. But I agree mm-hmm. with you, Carol, that, yeah, mm-hmm. that's... And that's I've run into a lot of people that have chronic fatigue syndrome, and they tend to get very bad reactions to quote unquote exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
but I absolutely hear what you're saying.
Yeah, it's a very good point. So that we can activate complications with things like lupus or MS or chronic fatigue with movement that isn't in harmony. Another thing that I think is relevant is you say that you've got to listen to your body. And so I guess, so I want everybody just to think about the seven pieces of this pie that Edie Summers has just laid out for us, and to kind of calculate which ones of those are in good stead and which ones are not. And we're going to go into that, into how am I managing these things? And if I'm tired, I'm waking up tired, then to go into these areas to really consider what do I need to adjust in order to be able to wake up in the morning feeling energetic and having energy for the day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in your book, and what I love about your book, is that you offer so many tools within each of these categories so that no one mm-hmm. person has to imitate the exact expression of these things that someone else might mm-hmm. imitate, and that the listening to your body is essential. But I have a question for you about that before we go farther with that. If you listen to your sick body who's addicted to yucky foods and cravings, your body will tell you to go to sugar and go to salt excessively and go to chips and the fatty hamburger, because your body has been trained that when it's hungry or not okay, it'll go to these things that are crave-based but not necessarily your body's well-being-based.
Mm-hmm.
And so
how
does one listen to your body when you haven't really reset it to move off of unhealthy cravings into yearning for that healthy relationship with your body?
That's such a great question. And so what I would say to that, and I mean, you're definitely the expert here in terms of psychology. I did study counseling for a little bit. In my experience, addiction is more of a brain imbalance, right? So your brain is asking, I mean, yes, your body can also be addicted to, say, sugar and can have withdrawals. But I would say that I would say that what I'm talking about with your voice, like your body's voice, is really the signals that your body is sending you, and those can be subtle. So I'll address that in a second, because I think that's your real voice, your body's real voice. But yes, I completely agree. The addictive voice, the addicted part of your body, I would say it's more related to maybe how your brain is addicted to, whether it's certain types of foods or stimulants. It also could be just what we're used to, right? An addiction in the sense of it's a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that I would necessarily call that a voice. I would call it a habit. I would call it a deeply ingrained habit or a chemical imbalance. and mm-hmm. I would love to know what you think about that. But a refined sugar is a great example of that, where it can feel very addictive, and there's mm-hmm. a high when you have it, and then there's a crash, and mm-hmm. it can deplete your B vitamins, and then your body certainly is asking for maybe more of that, it seems, but it's really to kind of alleviate the symptoms of sort of being overstimulated. So to distinguish, what I discovered, and people can see if they connect with this or not, is that there's, again, a very subtle voice in your body, but I think it's actually very strong as well. And it's all of your body's different organs communicating to your nervous system. It's called interoception, but of course I didn't know this when I was when I developed chronic fatigue way back in my 20s. All I noticed is that I was able to, maybe out of survival mode, all of a sudden I noticed all of these signals that my body was sending me to take it more easy, to maybe notice that a certain food was actually irritating my body and making my fatigue worse, or certain foods I would eat would make my energy better. And so when I say listening to your body's voice, that's what I'm talking about, is actually the signals mm-hmm. that your body is sending you versus maybe an addictive pattern or chemical imbalance mm-hmm. that your body might be very loudly saying to you, give this to me so that I can feel temporarily better.
Mm-hmm. Right. I guess what we have to say is that if people, as you're listening to this pie chart and listening to your body, be aware that we can have distorted signals and they're mm-hmm. distorted by whatever.
Definitely.
And we can misinterpret. Yeah. And I think, you know, sugar, absolutely. For example, can really be a sign that you're very dehydrated. And that would be one of the simplest ways of saying that our body miss signals us, or we misinterpret what the signal is.
I like that.
Yeah. So, or our body's having difficulty with insulin. And so instead of like really creeping into a healthy balancing of the insulin by taking care of it over a number of hours, we just rush mm-hmm. to it to give it that immediate high, which overloads the system. So I think everybody mm-hmm. has to say, look, yeah. I can listen to my body, but I have to be honest that I may have gotten my body into a place where I'm going to misinterpret signals, or the signals will be distorted because I have for too long practiced things that make my body not so great. And I think this is similar to relationships. Hmm. It's like people start getting angry with each other when they're really hurt. You know, they start, they start yelling and screaming, and really what they need to do is cry. So we can miss a line with what the real thing is going on, and we have to kind of honestly say, what can I discern, what's real? And maybe sometimes you just have to be very objective. I know, for example, broccoli is better for me than a jelly bean. So I think you have to know. Yeah, you have to sit there and say, okay, I have to be objective here, that my body may want the jelly bean, my mouth may want the jelly bean, but I know scientifically that broccoli is a better match for my body's actual functioning. Mm. So that's what I wanted to kind of distinguish as we talk about listening to your body, to recognize that there are times when we can get confused and distorted messages.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so
absolutely.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, please.
Well, I was going to say, I think so for me, when I started not feeling well, I've always felt like I've had a pretty strong, maybe strong will, but I had a really deep desire to feel better. And so I was very open to trying new things, whether it's spirulina or, you know, and even like when I started working at a natural food store, and I was exposed to all these, you know, when you talk about supplements or, you know, like organic foods and things that I hadn't really known about before. And I was just I had such a strong desire to feel better that I tried so many new things. And so part of it for me, like I was saying, was I noticed my vitality getting better just from experimenting. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of it is trial and error as well. And so.
Okay. So then we have kind of the basis of the pie chart, and that you listen mm-hmm. to your body, and that a part of getting better is also being able to experiment with different things that mm-hmm. might be relevant. Medical science may provide some information about that, but mostly you with what's available are going to have to experiment. You're going to have to be a better caregiver to your body than anybody else. No one else can take the care that you need to of your body. So let's go into your book then, along these lines. So I'm seeing chapters, lots of chapters or sections related to fatigue mm-hmm. in chapter 3. And you have the shadow of fatigue, some theories of CFS, and it just goes into very many categories of why you're tired and where you need to approach the tiredness. So with the pie chart in our place mm-hmm. and listening to our body as understood from this point of view, where would you recommend a person go first, or how they approach your book to understand what ways they need to experiment and steer their boat?
Yeah, so, and thank you for asking that question. And actually, first I would say, I would recommend that they first read the introduction, because it's very short, and especially if they're feeling tired. The introduction is page 5, and mm-hmm. it goes over, I believe, what are some of the highlights of the book, and it's just a couple pages, and that might give them, I believe, where some of the clues, the bigger clues might lie. But then if you were to go to chapter 3, and again, the title of the whole chapter is Waking Up Tired. Let's see. I would read the theories of CFS. I would read, first of all, I'd read what causes of fatigue. It's at the very beginning. What causes CFS, just toward the very, very beginning of the chapter, because a lot of people will find their story toward the very beginning. But again, like you were mentioning, you know, some people might have chronic fatigue because they have RA, rheumatoid arthritis, or they might have it because they have lupus. So it would be helpful, I think, to also just look at the chapter 3, the subtitles, and I have them all listed, and you can look at the page numbers and you can see if anything stands out to you. Since mm-hmm. the whole chapter is called Waking Up Tired, you can see if anything stands out, because I really do believe also in kind of the power of what is that where it
I'm
I can't
not
think
sure
of it right
I
now.
the ability,
you know, where
to
it's,
something pops out at you.
Yeah, just, you know, kind of going with the flow with it, right, to begin with. You know, so you're not trying so hard to find the answer, but just kind of see what pops out to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so since the whole chapter is called Waking Up Tired, you could start with the very first few kind of sections in there, the shadow of fatigue, waking up mm-hmm. tired, causes of fatigue, and what causes CFS. But other than that, I would start there. But other than that, you could read through some theories of CFS, and that's, again, all in Chapter 3, and just see what stands out to you, because your story is going to be very specific to you, and you can see, again, some people, you know, might have the iron deficient, and they might have anemia, and that might be the reason mm-hmm. that they have chronic fatigue. Mm-hmm. They might have MS. So they might have cancer fatigue. So I touch upon different possible reasons that people might have fatigue, and it's all in that same chapter. So that's those are the places I would start. And I hope that our connection is. Am I sounding?
You're fine. Yeah, you're good. You're good.
Okay.
So I'm looking at the chapters, and interestingly, I'm not being able to line up the pages that are on my PDF with the table of contents. And that may be just because of the way the PDF is organized. So I'm going to have
it
to go back and look at, if we can look at the causes of fatigue for a moment, and I can't find that page number on mine.
Yeah.
But if you can look that up and just kind of read the list of the causes of fatigue, that'd be great. Thanks.
Absolutely. Okay, so this is under Chapter 3, Waking Up Tired, and I have a section called Causes of Fatigue. It's on page 123, and let me just flip to that. Now, just
what I would
here.
Recommend, yeah, while you're doing that, what I'd recommend to the yeah. listeners is to be able to really not feel like you have everything, but just to look at the pie chart and then try to
yeah.
listen to the healthiest side of your body and then say, yeah. okay, what am I doing? What are the actions that I'm doing, the habits and patterns that I'm engaged in, and what am I exposed to that is contributing to my fatigue? And that formula, that looking at the causes may give you the formula on the other side of it as to what the recipe will be to begin to not be in fatigue. So that's why we go to the
causes.
Yeah, go for
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely, yeah. I would say, oh, yeah, go ahead, Carol.
No, please.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, absolutely. Start with symptoms, and then I have, in chapter 4, I talk about how I got better. And
yeah.
then even chapter 5 is called The Memory of Health, and so that also gets more into the spiritual and kind of energetic side of energy. But
yeah.
But it's nice to have where you can kind of see your story, where you can recognize the familiarity, and usually that's in when you hear or read symptoms that sound familiar to you. So
okay.
causes of fatigue, this is page 123 in chapter 3 in Waking Up Tired. So let's start with fatigue itself. There are many conditions that have fatigue as a symptom. Here are just some of them. Addiction, anemia, B12 deficiency, cancer, candida, chemical injury, chemotherapy and or radiation treatment, chronic fatigue syndrome, diabetes, inadequate diet, environmental illness, fibromyalgia, heart disease, hypoglycemia, hypothyroidism, lupus, medications like diuretics and beta blockers, mold, multiple chemical sensitivity, multiple sclerosis, toxicity from modified or synthetic foods. And again, that's only some of them. I'm sure there are other situations or conditions, and I've learned about other, you know, other conditions in the communities I'm in, but those
mm-hmm.
are those are the ones that stood out to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
And those are just a great stepping off point. You can look at those things and say, have I been blood tested or do I have the markers? You know, that those are good introductions to a good medical examination. See if we can rule
mm-hmm,
out
exactly.
different causes of fatigue. And so when people come to me and they just feel very depressed, often it's related to that they're actually very fatigued. And so to be able to diagnose that very carefully is, okay, is this may be depression as such, whatever, that's a very broad category actually. But if it's fatigue, then what are the possibilities? So I do have them get a very exhaustive blood test, telling their doctor to rule out everything that might be related to fatigue so we just understand the nature of the body. Most doctors really just want to do the basic panel. I much prefer a much broader base panel, which would include things like some of the complications you just mentioned. So it's nice to rule out so that while you're going through
absolutely.
Your 7 pie charts, ruling out those causes to me seems very relevant. If we go into the next section, some of the theories of chronic fatigue syndrome, starting on page 129 here in terms of the table of contents, some of the ones that stand out to me are, it's easy to consider iron deficiency. It's easy to find out about hypothyroid because that's so easy to treat once it's down. It's more complicated to look at your digestive tract and alter the microbes in your body and to deal with candida, which is kind of a long growing state that also needs a long grow opposite of it. Then you have things that are related to vagus nerve damage, related to trauma, rheumatoid arthritis, the oxidative states. I think this is great. I'm working my way down to estrogen because I think that females
estrogen dominance.
So estrogen, progesterone. We know the lack of testosterone even in women is really relevant to energy levels, and we know this when you're having your cycle, right? Oh, I'm about to have my period. I feel really tired. You need to listen to your body in terms of fatigue. Can you address hormonal complications that are related to more diseases or more severe situations than just PMS?
Oh, sure. Well, so as much as I can, and again, so I definitely want to qualify that I'm not a doctor, and I'm more of a, I would say, researcher and patient,
and
advocate. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I
Thank
do think that's
important.
Thank
you for researching. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. sure. So, and yeah, I mean, well, actually, so, and again, what I understand is that, I mean, I want to take it back to kind of, well, first of all, I know that you were asking me this about, like, when we get older, like, how do we, like, what if our hormone levels change? First of all, they can be affected by stress, and very, very tiny levels in changes in, like, cortisol can really impact how you feel. And can also create fatigue, but I know that they also can kind of throw off your hormones. Like, I think we all know this intuitively. I hope this was your question, Carol. Remind me if it's not.
Great.
Okay. What I understand and have also experienced is that, you know, stress, I mean, a little bit is okay, but if we have chronic stress, it can very easily throw off all different types of hormones, whether that's estrogen or I mean, it kind of depends on every person's a little bit different. And, of course, then you also have to think about endocrine disruption if you're looking at the environment and toxins, and everyone can be a little bit different. But and then also changes as you get older and you approach menopause, then I know that your estrogen levels definitely change then. So then you have to kind of recalibrate again, and, you know, your cortisol levels can change in terms of what they're producing. And were you asking me this in terms of how it relates to energy?
Sure. All of this is great. Keep going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think what really stuck out to me, again, whether it's a researcher or a patient or an advocate, is that the hormone levels, whether it's estrogen or anything else, minute changes can really make a difference in how we feel. So again, you know, there are endocrinologists who specialize in this that can help people, whether it's with T levels or estrogen levels or balancing out progesterone. I know that when I was younger, I did see a naturopath, and I was apparently low in progesterone. Mm-hmm. So I started taking progesterone back then, and it made a huge difference for me in terms of, I would say, energy and just feeling more of that sense of stability and homeostasis, which I think is really the goal of the body. The body seeks homeostasis. I call it kind of like a dynamic homeostasis. But so again, if stress is throwing off your hormones, or, you know, just changes over time or toxins, all of these things, that's why I do think it is important to find practitioners to work with. It's good to know what your hormone levels are. To kind of keep tabs on them, and just know that they will change. And again, you know, I certainly don't want to say anything that isn't inaccurate, you know, because I probably won't be able to go into details. But I do notice that now that I'm 53, when I took progesterone, I was in my 30s, maybe even 20s. And now I'm 53. So I have definitely noticed that my estrogen and progesterone have changed. And, you know, I've had to change my tactics, my self-care tactics. And that's why I give self-care such a big piece of the pie, because things have changed now, and things that used to work for me in terms of improving my energy don't necessarily work now. So I give a lot of different tactics for people to try, but it's a very dynamic kind of mindful daily experience, and, you know, to show up for yourself and to really check in and check in with what your body is asking of you. And again, you have to go back to experimenting, but it is really good to work with someone too. I've met people who develop chronic fatigue after being pregnant. And so, again, I wouldn't know all the, you know, hormone levels that go into that, but something happened for them, and they developed health issues afterwards. So I think there are all different types of scenarios, and they can be very complicated. So it is good to know your numbers. And so I think that's a little bit of what I might be able to contribute, you know, on that subject. And what are your thoughts on that, Carol?
Oh, you're good at turning this around, aren't you? Well, I'm going to say, you're very funny. Okay, so I'm going to say that when I look at this chapter 3, I think this is such an invaluable section of your book. And as a researcher and as someone who has a heart in this, you do give people an opportunity to consider a lot of the systems that are associated to why they might be tired, so that they can have a broad-based appreciation, like, well, is it this? Is it that? Is it part of this? Is it part of that? Mm-hmm. And what's complicated is it might be a collection of them. I often think, like, that's why I asked you about the pie chart. I often think that if you can think of the 5 different contributors to something happening in the negative, and then 5 different things you could put in the recipe that can reverse that, you're more likely to succeed at reversing the negative, because you aren't approaching it by one thing. You're approaching it by a multidimensional, multifaceted aspect, I should say. And so that's why pie chart to me is so helpful. So to be able to say, well, it might be a combination of my iron, I might be hypothyroid, gee, my estrogen level may be off. You know, I've really had that stressor, which has gotten the cortisol and the serotonin all messed up. And then now you're looking at, and my sleep is all askew because I've had these trauma. I mean, you say, okay, I've had these 5 contributors. Now I need to probably get all of these systems aligned. That is not something that necessarily your medical doctor is going to do, because the medical doctors are very streamlined, and their bandwidth, because there's so much to know in the field of medicine, their bandwidth is narrow. And so you need to be as broad-based appreciative of how complex your body is and your life is, and then be able to say, okay, this doctor may be able to deal with these aspects of the recipe of my well-being. And this movement expert, such as a yoga teacher, or energy, such as a Tai Chi or things along those lines, that's going to help with that dimension. My diet, nutritionists are going to understand better. So you have to say a multiple of experts may confuse, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen. But on the other hand, our bodies are complex. And just to do one system is a little bit like saying, well, I'm tired, I'm going to go get my 30 grams of caffeine or 300 grams of caffeine.
The quick fix. I've been there. I really appreciate that you said that. And actually, that reminds me of it really is about reaching helping your body reach a tipping point. Yes, by trying. And again, you don't want to overwhelm yourself, but your body works as a system together. And that I believe think of it as a web. And you can kind of touch that web on any part of the web, and it'll affect the whole web. But the more that you can kind of strengthen the web and, you know, approach from several approach your health holistically. It reminds me of an interview I did. It was on Blog Talk Radio. It was with a journalist who developed health issues. And for her, when I asked her, well, what worked for you? She said, you know, I don't think it was just one thing. It was many, it was several things all together. Mm-hmm. So exactly what you were just saying. So I really appreciate that you mentioned that, because I think it's also it can be scary for people and disheartening if you're not feeling well, you know, whether you have chronic fatigue or anything else, chronic pain, or you have several conditions going on at the same time, and you're just not, you really don't feel well. It can feel overwhelming to even know where to start. And kind of think of your body holistically, and how can you, you know, kind of coax your body into raising its vitality through several kind of gentle methods, you know, like whether it's through nutrition or maybe it is adjusting hormones. And you know, when you were talking about estrogen, it reminds me of, and again, I wouldn't say I'm an expert on this field, but kind of synthetic estrogens, I've definitely had issues with running into those in terms of toxins. And so that's a whole other subject, but you know, it's really good to be mindful of what seems to be raising your vitality versus kind of causing your body to feel in a state of chaos. Really, again, I think the goal is resilience. So what's going to make your body and your soul and your heart and your mind, everything all together, your psyche all together, kind of feel more resilient? And there's so many different tactics.
There's so many different tactics, and it's hard to know which one's going to be right, so don't stall out. Just get started.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah, absolutely, because it all makes a difference.
Okay. So I hesitate to get off of this point of how many things can contribute to tiredness and how to really think complexly about this, because I think this is almost core to every other form of disorder, is that fatigue is a symptom of almost every disorder. I like your word, chaos.
Yeah. It is. Yeah.
So
thank you.
So you've mentioned this tiredness. I went, that's just core. You know, that's in every list on the medical list. It's fatigue.
Yeah.
Exactly. So now that we've kind of covered that, and please people make sure that's important, and you know, the seven aspects of the pie of health, where do we take this discussion? Do we go to what the definition of self-care is? For you, because I think self-care to me is going to be different. For example, I cannot stand to get my fingers manicured or my toenails. It drives me absolutely crazy. I can't stand polish on my nails. I can't stand the smell. I can't stand the look. I love it on others. It's great. It's beautiful. I love it. So nicely groomed. I can't stand to sit still that long when I'd rather, you know, I want to be doing anything but. But for some people, and many of my clients, being able to have their hands massaged and getting everything pretty and having that cosmetic beauty added, I can't stand to go for my haircut. It just drives me crazy. Sit still. But for other people, someone washing their hair and cutting is relaxing. So what I'm trying to illustrate is what is self-care to one person is not necessarily everybody's recipe. So are there fundamentals that you think we need to pay attention when we put together that self-care package that help us guide our selection of what will work?
And this could almost be like a whole other pie chart. I can kind of see what you were asking that way now. Absolutely. It reminds me of a coworker. So for him, it's like hiking. For me, it's yoga. It's anything that relaxes me. When you use the term relaxing, I think it's any activity that helps you relax so that you're getting into that parasympathetic state and creating the relaxation response in your body, and also taking care of yourself. So it's being mindful, it's being present. So it could be, I mean, if I were to make a pie chart, it would probably be, you know, if it's related to self-care, mindfulness, presence, relaxation, joy, you know, things along those lines. What are practices, whether they're serious practices like, you know, meditation or, I mean, if you want to call that serious, or Qigong or Tai Chi, or maybe it's things that are fun. Like, I personally love to watch movies to relax. I love stories. For me, getting in deep into a storyline, I used to read a ton when I was younger. That really helped me to relax and be present. that was a, I didn't know it at the time, but I think that was a huge act of self-care for me. And these days, with my, when I do have a very busy schedule, yes, I still practice stretching and yoga, use essential oils for me, you know, check in with myself. You know, I would love to journal more. Some people like to journal for self-care. But I know that if I flip on a story, eventually, if I find a good one, I know that I'll start relaxing. For a lot of people, it's music, whether playing music or listening to music or both. That's another one that really helps me is I love a lot of types of music, but if I'm feeling stressed out and not feeling present and kind of feeling other than or feeling outside of my body, I'll play kind of new age or neoclassical music that yoga music, something that just drops me deep into the present moment and helps me start to take slower, deeper breaths and also makes me feel more connected to myself and the world. And so it's going to be different for everybody. I think it's, there is a famous coach, I can't think of her name right now. She's one of the first coaches and she wrote a whole book on, I think it's deep self-care. I could be getting that wrong, but it's something along those lines. And I really like her name is Cheryl Richardson. And I think she's pretty well known in the coaching world, but I really like how she uses that phrase, you know, deep self-care. And, you know, you could even tack on another deep there, like practice deep, deep self-care. And I think it's whatever is going to drop you, help you melt away your stress for you personally and also not have a to-do list. You know, if I were, I think that might, I would probably put that in the pie too. So I would have like unstructured time in the pie, you know, mindfulness in the pie. This is like a pie of self-care, unstructured time, joy, you know, mindfulness, presence, anything that makes you feel relaxed. So I know it could go on. I mean, self-care could be anything for somebody. But,
but you know, it's tricky because when is self-care different from self-indulgence? And when is it exactly the same? When is self-care about the nifty little fun things you get to do? And when is doing the nifty little fun things actually a distraction from self-care? So again, it's so what's the definition? Yeah. So I guess what you're saying is you could measure authentic self-care based on the speed of your respiration and heart rate. You could measure self-care by the emotional states of peacefulness, and you mentioned joy. You could measure if this is self-care in that it gives you an elevated ability to feel connected to yourself and then connected to the part of the world that feels a positive part of the world. You're present with the others in the other experiences, places, and so forth and so on that you, that feel very positively connecting, but you also feel very connected to yourself. Because when you use the word presence, I got really confused. Like the word presence, I could be present in the midst of the Ukrainian war, and I would hope to God I would have tremendous presence, but I'm not going to find I'm not going to find relaxation and peacefulness.
Interesting.
And then, and then also then that leads to the question of this. I find people who are highly anxious, always seeking to have a state of relaxation, almost to the degree of avoidance and almost to the degree of being paranoid about feeling anxious. You know, like, oh no, I can't go. I can't go there. It's too overwhelming. As if they don't trust that. You know, some anxiety can be kind of fun, or some anxiety can mean you're engaged and you're excited. And some anxiety is not really anxiety. It's butterflies and novelty and newness and I've never tried this before. You know, so so when does relaxing almost become oh gosh, I hate this word, pathological? So, what are your thoughts?
Or avoidance. Interesting.
Yeah,
well, wow, those are really interesting points, Carol. So for anyone who's listening, and I don't usually share this with a lot of people, but I would consider myself an anxious person. And I think it's because of I have a highly sensitive system. And so that's something I've struggled with most of my life. So I appreciate your question because
yeah, I appreciate your response.
I do have to gently or strongly sometimes encourage myself to get out there more or be more social, which can also be really, really great for, I believe, helping to balance your body out again. That social piece is really critical. So I don't know. For me, I'm also an introvert, so I need a lot of downtime. Maybe everyone's a little different. Like maybe extroverts need more. Maybe their self-care is more kind of focused on, and some people are like adrenaline seeking, you know, they seek adrenaline. That for them is potentially self-care, I don't know. But that raises a really interesting question. I don't know. I think for me, I feel like I can't get enough downtime, but I also, you know, I can have a very intense schedule. So I really treasure and need that downtime. However, I can see how, you know, you also want to encourage your body and your heart and your soul and your mind to engage and have and cultivate that eustress, right? Which probably does, which is kind of like that positive stress and novelty. Maybe for some people, self-care is novelty, like new things. And I certainly crave some of that. And so I appreciate what you're saying. You know, it's good. It is good to get out there and have new experiences and since social engagement, that can be very calming, right? I mean, it's, that can create, I don't know if it's, well, certainly, is it oxytocin or is that how you say it?
Right,
it can create
sure.
that kind of bonding, that bonding, is it a hormone? So, and maybe even dopamine. So it can give you energy to also, so I would certainly, and I know that people in my social circle, it hasn't been as good out here in Portland, but it's getting a little better. And I appreciate that they are trying to get me out of my shell more. So anyway.
Yeah. And coming out of the COVID era, a lot of people are having to take their hermit by the leash and go for a walk with it and say, we cannot stay here and coalesce in this beautiful, peaceful space without all, you know, and neglect. There's so much more that our being may actually benefit from and appreciate. I guess that, you know, in pursuit of a calm, I have a book called Own Your Inner Peace. It's one of my books.
But the
question is this, is that inner peace doesn't necessarily mean calm. It means that you're in a state of synchronicity with yourself.
We would say
heart coherence is heart math developed heart coherence where your heart is optimally irregular and optimally regular. That there's a certain amount of irregularity that keeps your heart healthy and a certain amount of irregularity that moves your heart into not being healthy. So it's this type of awareness that, you know, variety does build stamina. It does build the resilience. And it also can help with self-confidence because the less things you experiment with, the less confidence you have about experimenting. So it's,
interesting.
You know, exposure's everything. When you're exposed to something repeatedly, you become more masterful than if you avoid and avoid and avoid. So I'm wondering if in self-care we're looking for kind of a synergistic and a coherent way of of being within your body and at the same time regulating yourself regardless of whatever dysregulation is going on out there. I don't know. This is also
ambiguous.
I love that.
No, it's not at all. It's brilliant. And yeah, I would love to learn more about, I've studied coherence a little bit and heart math. I did a little bit of heart math when I was volunteering at a domestic violence shelter. They had all the tools set up there and it was fascinating. I could see how, you know, they had me all hooked up and when someone would walk in the door, my heart rate would go up.
There you go.
You know, I had to, yeah, I had to use my mind to calm my body down again. And I could watch how my heart rate was changing, you know, and the more I kind of told myself to be calm, of course, with stimuli going on, right, because I was in somewhat intense situation, the more calm, you know, the kind of more variable it was, but also kind of more mellow my the changes in my heart rate were. And of course that's connected to the vagus nerve, right? Like heart rate variability is connected to your vagal tone, and that's a huge indicator in the research I've seen that's connected to resilience and better immunity, lower inflammation. And the vagus nerve is, you know, they call it the wandering nerve, and it kind of connects your brain to your body or your mind to your body. And and of course I would love to learn more about the heart, right? Because that has neurons in it. And I mean, we're learning more and more about how it's kind of like its own
brain,
like brain, like a third brain, right? Because you're your gut is also a brain, like your enteric nervous, your nervous system is a brain, but, and of course your actual brain, but then your heart has neurons, right? Like a brain as well. So that's fascinating to me. And I do talk about traumatic resilience in my book, and I think a lot of people, sometimes developing a chronic condition or for other reasons, whether it's abuse or trauma, you know, people can get stuck in a trauma state. I'm sure you work with people all the time who have who have trauma, and it can be, I'm sure, delicate to work with people. And I've experienced it myself, and there is a fine line. I agree with you. I feel like that you want to practice a lot of self-care and take good care of yourself, show up for yourself, but then there is at some point you have to find that courage to. Isn't that how you kind of recover from trauma, is by exposing yourself to new, or that even similar circumstances, right? Or what your body might perceive as potentially dangerous, even though it's not. I would love to know your thoughts on that too.
Well, you know, there's some treatments where it's an exposure therapy, but usually that's related to like phobias. Like if you're afraid of snakes, then you like expose yourself to snakes a lot. And I'm watching a spider crawl on my floor, and I'm going to expose yourself to spiders that are always within 8 feet of you anyway, so you might as well, you know, be compatible with them. So, you know, that exposure therapy is definitely, relevant to that sense of self-confidence, and I can handle this, and, to differentiate between what's imagined and what's actual fear, you know, what anxiety signals are trained, habituated, or imagined versus what anxiety signals really do help you be able to avoid what you need to avoid or fly away or fight it off. Mm-hmm. So that would be relevant to that. In terms of trauma, I wouldn't recommend anybody walking back into the state of trauma, because that's where a lot of badness has occurred. I mean, you don't want to go and expose yourself to people who might rape you, for example. You learn how to avoid situations that are trauma environments. But I'm interested in knowing more about the vagus nerve and everything else. And oh my goodness, 60 minutes, we can't really cover it all. That's why everybody, you have to read this book. You actually have to get it either for yourself or whomever you love. The Memory of Health, A Journey to Wellbeing, Edie Summers. And Edie, how can they contact you through the internet or phone?
Oh, well, thank you so much, Carol. And I just want to thank you for having me on your show. And that did fly by. And I know there's so many things we could talk about. So if they want to contact me, a good way to be in touch with me is either Instagram or Facebook. Instagram is edie.summers and Facebook is ediesummers. So it's pretty easy to get on there. That's a good way to contact me as well. I would say you can always instant message me on either one of those platforms. I would say that's probably the best way. I do have an email as well, ediesummers@gmail.com. But I find instant messaging is I don't know, maybe a little more reliable these days.
Okay. So can you go ahead and give me your connections again? I'm going to type them in. What are they?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. So Instagram.com and then / EDIE.SUMMERS.
Okay.
So on Instagram, there's edie.summers. And then on Facebook, it's facebook.com/ ediesummers. So EDIE, S as in Sam, UMMERS. And I do have an author page. Yeah, I have an author page on Facebook as well. I think it's Edie Summers Author, I think. I should know this, but I'd have to look it up. But I'm probably more active on just my, you know, regular Facebook page on there.
Okay. All right. Okay, so if you have questions, Edie is so – I've listened to many interviews you've done, Edie. You're very thoughtful. Oh. You do have so much information to provide. And one thing that you really do demonstrate is there is always a growing understanding about what our body needs, wants, and desires and responds to. And you're very responsive to the newness going on in research and the findings. Mm-hmm. Your book is a beautiful foundation for people to begin to really appreciate the complexities of what they're experiencing and how their body really is dependent upon our choices and our activities that we can voluntarily do. There's enough stuff we can't control, but what happens when we're not controlling what we need to control? So your book really does respond well to all of this. So anything
Thank
else you'd
you
like
so
to
much,
say?
Carol.
Sure. Anything else you'd like to say to the listeners as they pursue their optimal health?
Well, I would just say that this is kind of a new phrase that I would like to impart to people that I've been thinking about lately to kind of sum it all up is that just know that your well-being is worth it. And, you know, I think that, you know, sometimes we can feel overwhelmed when we're trying to feel better, but that can also be a motivator. You know, for me, setting an intention to feel better really made a difference because that made me try new things, seek out new things, and just know that you're worth it, know your well-being is worth it, and then, you know, take good care of yourself, and let's try to take care of one another and the planet as well, since we're also deeply interconnected here. And I do believe that contributes to individual well-being and collective well-being as well.
Oh, absolutely. Beautifully, beautifully said. Folks, you've discovered this podcast interview. Go discover Edie Summers and her amazing book. It'll just truly open up to you being the true scientist and caregiver of your body. Again, The Memory of Health, A Journey to Well-Being with Edie Summers. Edie, shall we continue this one day to talk about all the other things in your book, like the energy work? I just love the sections on the energy work, and we will continue the dialogue, I hope. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Likewise, Carol, thank you so much for having me on your show today.
And listeners, thank you for your time. Be well, okay?
Welcome to the Dr. Carol Francis Talk Radio Show. Let's make life happen together with authors, scientists, researchers, both inside the box and outside the box of understanding so that you can live a life full of your success. Curiosity, enjoyment, happiness, and richness of life in every respect. Let's go beyond our limits, and let's have others go beyond their limits as well. Welcome.
Have the best of days.